Ciao, ciao, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Horror Countdown Podcast. I'm your host, Don and Ellie, and with me tonight is a very special guest, a returning guest, and I should say the very first guest. Please welcome the man who helped to christen the show, one of my favorite friends in the genre, Mr. Bill Van Vagel.
Well, thank you, Don, for having me on. And I had actually forgotten I was the first guest. But you know what? You got to start strong, and then it's all downhill from there, right?
Probably.
Yeah. I was going to say, to everybody out there, if you haven't heard me before, I'm Bill Van Vagel. I'm on a co-host of Land of the Creeps with Greg Amortis, Dave Becker, and Pearl Morgan. I'm also a contributing partner to the new updated horror movie podcast. I had a podcast with my friend Nathan Bartlebaugh, Phantom Galaxy, that's currently on a bit of a hiatus. And I'm just an all-round cinephile that tries to... I'm the only guy you'll know that watches some obscure 1973 made-for-TV horror movie instead of Marvel.
No worries. I'm kind of like that as well. I've never seen one after... I've watched Iron Man and I tapped out and said, I'm good.
It's funny that the last movie of the Marvel Universe I watched was Iron Man in the theaters.
I saw it at home, but I mean, close enough.
But I mean, that was what, 2005?
Six or seven, maybe. Six or,
whatever.
Between that area, but yeah, enough of that. For tonight's episode, we are going to be looking at our top 10 favorite Italian horror films. I mean, if you followed the show, you'll know that this is a genre near and dear to me. It's some of my favorite films of all time. And in fact, those of you that have heard episode zero, you will know that there are going to be a great deal of films on my list from that particular section. But since this was your choice, let's get a little background and what the purpose of the show was and how you formed your list.
Honestly, when I had you approach me and say, would you like to be on the show? Of course, I was flattered. I came on. And I thought of one as I was discussing with Don prior to, for Land of the Creeps and my various other projects, I'm counting down my top 2023 films. I wanted one that would be interesting for the listeners. I wanted one that was also very special to me. But on top of everything, it was one I didn't have to do a whole heck of a lot of research for. And so between those three things and just a genuine enjoyment of movies from that country, that era, that type of production value, I was all for this one.
Well, I mean, I can't say that lack of production for episodes is a very, very welcoming factor for wanting to do this. I do have other things going on, and not having to do much work, much in the way of prep work, is a very, very special attraction. So that's a very prominent factor. But like I said, most of these are in my top 10 favorite films of all time. If you've heard that show, six of these will be in my top 10, and the rest of these pretty much fill out the back half of the list. The rest of the list pretty is filled with choices found between 11 to 20. So these are some of my nearest and dearest favorites. I am a humongous fan of the genre. My last name gives it away that I do have a very, very intense pride of my homeland's country. And yes, I should say that I am genuinely from Italy. My great-grandparents came over. I have the documents. I have a proof of validation, whatever you need. But yeah, I am, for the most part, a genuine Italian descendant. So the fact that I have a country that has such an enormous wealth of material to choose from, it is a, factor that does weigh a little bit heavily on my choices, but I do think that there's a just absolutely humongous swath of films to choose from that are not only good films in general, but I think they stand up against some of the best films from any country. I would probably take the top five or any sort of like, you know, top three of, you know, films from Italy and place them up against any country in the world that you want. And I think that in terms of the legacy, in terms of the history, in terms of their importance, I think they stand toe to toe and shoulder to shoulder with just about any kind of classic that you want to throw out there. I do think that there is a statement to be made that they produce some of the best, if not the best. And for their history, for their heritage, for the legacy that they've created, the influence that they've left, I think that they do genuinely stand as one of the masters in their fields. Not maybe so much in the more recent years, just because I haven't seen or heard of as many, maybe from like the last 5 to 10 years. But I would say pre-2000, you're generally going to get a good time if you find anything that came out of Italy. Few exceptions, of course. Not everything works, but if you find a pre-2000 Italian horror film, you're probably going to be in for a good time, or at least a cheesy, you know, laugh riot if all else fails.
I was going to say, I don't think anybody would say Bruno Mattei is your next, you know, top director. He's no Alfred Hitchcock, but he is fun.
Exactly, yeah. And curiously enough, I do have a Bruno Mattei show coming later in the year.
Oh, do you? Wonderful. Can you imagine the research you're going to have to slog through?
Oh, you mean fun? I'm a Bruno fan.
I'll be very curious where Rats gets on your list.
Oh, cool. We'll find out when the show drops, but
because you haven't made your list yet.
Well, I haven't finished. There's still a few of the early exploitation stuff that he made in the early 80s that I haven't gotten to yet, which is probably going to be my prep work for that. I still need to see his Women in Prison stuff, and I think one or two of the Nazi exploitation films he made. But I think I've got most of his career after that pretty much figured out. But
I have one of his as kind of, I hate the term guilty pleasure. If you like film, you like a film. But this one is one that, as an honorable mention, I always kind of like as a ripoff of a major American film.
Totally.
But I won't say till the end, because who knows, it could be on the list.
Yeah, but I think it's time for us to dive into the pasta and, you know, move some marinara sauce around.
I was going to say, let's get the linguine with the rosé sauce and let's get going.
Indeed. I guess I will take the lead on this one. And
jump in the pool.
Oh, we're not diving just into the pool yet. We're heading down to the movie theater because number 10 for me is Demons. So, yeah. To me, this is easily one of, I think, the best film of the 80s. Absolutely, just a ton of fun. For those that haven't seen it, it's basically a movie theater that is hosting a private screening of this latest horror movie. And the guests in question find that the area is possessed by demonic creatures that possess several of the patrons inside, and they chase around the unpossessed and, you know, turn them or kill them, essentially. And that's pretty much the movie.
Yeah, there's some really cool mask. There's a really cool mask that's in.
No,
in
yeah.
And there's a scene in a bathroom involving a prostitute that, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily one that goes as over the top as some of the other stuff out there, but yeah, if you're just looking for just like this roller coaster ride, it starts fast, it ends fast, and it's just a blast nonstop. You've got a heavy metal soundtrack with some absolute bangers playing. You've got tons of gore, practical effects. You know, again, you've got fun characters. You know, the leads in here are pretty cool, you know, trying to keep everybody alive. The usual dissension, who's going to be the macho leader, who's going to, you know, fall in line, and who's going to, you know, be the one that, you know, breaks the group and lets the creatures attack them.
The other thing I like about it is if you are sensitive to sights and smells and touches and that kind of thing, a lot of crawling around on cinema floors.
Right, yeah.
Like, ooey gooey, yucky.
Yeah. Yeah, Demons is a guaranteed fun time. Like I said, I've talked about it in several other episodes, favorite films of the 80s and stuff like that. But yeah, Demons is a blast and should definitely be watched. So I'll go ahead and leave that one at my number 10.
All right. When you mentioned it in a theater, I thought you were going to touch upon one that I have in my honorable mentions.
Maybe but we'll get there.
We may very well still get there.
Maybe.
Maybe. So my number 10 is one that nobody will ever say is a cinematic masterpiece, but I have a whack load of fun with this one. That is 1984 film directed by Franco Prosperi. That is The Wild Beasts. which I enjoy. To give everybody the backdrop on this one, they're at a zoo. I think it's a German zoo, to be quite frank.
It's Northern Europe. It's not in Italy. It's Northern Europe. I don't remember I don't remember it specifically. Maybe it's Sweden or Denmark, but it's Northern Europe for sure. I do know that part. Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens is in the water supply, it somehow gets diluted and infected with PCP. And so all the animals in the zoo become haywire and leave. They all of a sudden get this incredible strength and this thought of mind to break out, and they basically are attacking the citizenry around the town that the zoo is in. And you get these great animal chase scenes. There's one chase scene involving, I believe it's a cheetah and a car. There is a elephant head stomp. What always baffled me with the film, though, despite the fact I love it, is it affected the animals. It didn't seem to affect the humans. Unless they were taking PCP, I don't know how that worked, but it's just a ball of fun, and the poster is great, and it's what, an hour 32. That's what I love about Italian films. You're not, unless you're getting into Fellini films or something, you're not going to get two and a half hour epics. They're 90 minute in, out, boom, and that's what this one is. Get your popcorn, hold your wife's hand, and watch The Wild Beasts.
Yeah, not on my list, but I'm definitely on board with that one. Great, great time. One of those they can't make it today just because of the fact that the actual animals are genuinely running loose amongst the cast members. You know, one of those PETA is going to be all over that thing in a heartbeat. But I mean, it's a fun time. I really like that one. So.
Alrighty. So yeah. So I'm going to say, can you answer my question? Why weren't the humans affected?
I think it was just in the supply that was fed to the animals. I don't think it was part of the, I don't remember specifically. I think it was just in the parts that was distributed to the animals. I don't think it was a citywide thing.
Well, I think it's funny though, because again, a lot of these kind of films, they always put some kind of token scene towards science, but they're really not.
Yeah.
So they don't.
Like fully... I said, I don't remember specifically, just because it has been a hot minute since I've seen it. But I think it was that the specific part that was poisoned was just in the pool that was gonna supply, that was gonna be supplied to the animals. I don't remember if it was citywide, but I think that was the explanation. I think it was just in the stuff that was fed to the animals, not for general consumption.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it 3-4 times and still possible I missed that. So.
Yeah. I miss stuff all the time, but I think that was the reason. Again, hot minute, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Please correct me. But that's always been my take, is from what I remember seeing it. But.
Alrighty. What you got for number 9, Don?
Well, number 9, I figured it would be apropos that these kind of are lumped together. My number 10 was Demons, which was, I forgot to mention, directed by Lamberto Bava. I figured it's time that we take a trip to the patriarchy, and we visit 1963's Black Sabbath, directed by Mario Bava. Don't worry, Bava will probably appear sooner or later. Yeah, Black Sabbath is an absolute masterpiece. For me, it's probably either 2 or number 3 all time on my favorite anthologies. I absolutely love this movie. Mario Bava doing gothic horror with Boris Karloff. I mean, is that just not absolute heaven right there? three-part story. Depends on what version you watch, which is an important notice. If I remember correctly, and I believe I have my memory correct, in the Italian version, the film starts off with the telephone, which is about a woman that is stalked by a person that she believes is supposed to be in prison, but has gotten out, and she spends the night with her girlfriend, and you know, shenanigans go from there. No spoilers. The second story is called The Verdelac, which is a vampire coming to attack his family members, which is the Karloff segment. And the third segment is the Ring, or I always forget what the actual segment is called, but it's about a caretaker who discovers that her charge has passed away, and that she has a diamond, or not necessarily a diamond, but like a very valuable ring on her hand, and swipes it only to be haunted by her specter afterwards. Oh, drop of water. Damn. It just came to me. As soon as I said that, I knew what it was. So yeah, if you're watching the Italian version, like I said, it's The Telephone, The Verdelac, and The Drop of Water. If you watch the American version, it's A Drop of Water, The Telephone, Verdelac. So the segments are kind of shuffled around a little. I don't know why. The only thing I can necessarily figure is that they go by in order of the segment's length. Because the shortest segment, A Drop of Water, is first, and the longest segment, Verdelac, is last. But I don't know. You'll have to, you know, contact the producers that distributed it and who made the changes. But, you know, they're long since gone, so I don't know if there's any way of doing that ethically. But either version you watch, you're going to get just a fantastic story. All three segments are absolute winners. Some of the creepiest gothic imagery out there in the genre, especially in The Drop of Water. That thing is haunting. When you see the specter come to life and do her thing, it is genuinely chilling. Like I said, there's no duds at all. Three fantastic segments. You're in and out again, under 90 minutes. Can't go wrong here. And, you know, you've got Mario Bava at the peak of his powers, doing gothic horror with Boris Karloff. It is just an absolute treat. And it, like I said, it is genuinely one of my all-time favorite anthologies, an absolute masterpiece. Number 9, Black Sabbath.
Yeah, it has been a hot minute since I've seen it. It's been a little while. But yeah, the detail, the production value for 1963 is bang on. And I never really go much by IMDb ratings and things. I mean, they've messed up a few things over the years, and it is what it is. But for a 1963 film that's a horror anthology on IMDb, it gets a 7.
Yeah.
And that is saying something. And the other nice thing about this film, when you go into where it says writers, you got Chekhov, you got Tolstoy, you got Guy de Maupassant. Like, it's coming from quality. It's coming from classics. And then
exactly,
to have,
yeah,
and have Bava's Italian sensibilities and horror sensibilities, and you got to do it within budget to have it come off this way. Yeah, it's, as they say in the rock world, it's a banger.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. I think that 7 is, for IMDb, strongly accurate. But, yeah, it like I said, one of my all-time favorite anthologies, and it's an absolute masterpiece. Well,
yeah. I mean, you could argue that. You could argue Creepshow. You know, you can quibble with things, but it's right in that conversation.
Exactly, yeah. It's a genuine top three, regardless of where you... Yeah. The placement is trivial, but I think in terms of top three, it's Black Sabbath, Creepshow, and Trick or Treat. Taste may vary, order may vary, but it's in that conversation for sure.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for those Amicus films, but it is what it is. Number 9, for me, we're going to the theater. we are doing a film known as two things, which isn't uncommon with these Italian films, depending upon where they're being shown. They were named 17 different things. Mine is Stage Fright, also known as Aquarius. And it's a film that I remember watching it for the first time, probably in the mid to late 90s, and going, wow. One of the things I love as a horror watcher is small, confined space, survival, try to escape. And this one's got a maniacal killer that's come from a mental asylum, and he makes his way into a troupe of actors that are getting ready for a big stage production. And let's just say it's a version that's done many times of Agatha Christie's 10 Little Indians. You've got a large group that eventually gets whittled down and whittled down and whittled down. Now, this is a movie that kind of lineage, that kind of production, and that kind of storyline has been told many times, but it's done really well this way. There's obviously the inept police. There's, you know, some nice looking women. There's some inept men. There's characters that are throwaways, but there's also a unique killer with a unique outfit at many times. And there's the very end, like, it keeps you hanging right to the end. And that's what I really like about this film. I'm sure you've seen it, Don. I'm not going to ask you to elaborate, other than you enjoyed it.
Oh, I absolutely did. Unfortunately, it is number 12 on my list.
Oh, it's number 12. Okay.
Yeah, it would be number 12 on my list. I am a massive, massive fan of Stage Fright. Perfect mixture of slasher and giallo elements. Probably maybe a little bit more slasher, just because unlike in most giallos, we know who the killer is, so there's no identity to figure out. The cast doesn't know, but yeah, I mean, we the viewers do, so that does kind of maybe lower those influences. But I'm a huge fan of this one. Like I said, it's number 12. Didn't quite make the list and was one of the last ones to come off, but I'm a huge fan.
I hasten to call it a giallo. I never really considered it a giallo. I considered it a slasher with giallo elements.
I do too. Yeah. Like I said, it's a good combination between the two. Probably, like I said, has more slasher elements just because a lot of the traditional giallo ones are pushed to the side. But it is a very, very good one. I'm definitely glad you mentioned it.
The only giallo that I can recall that, you know the killer right away is Hatchet for the Honeymoon.
Yeah. Another one would be, what was the name? My mind's trying to blank here.
You're getting deep. Deep and obscure for me.
Directed by Luigi Cozzi, stars George Hilton, 1974-75. Give me one second here. Let me pull out Troy Howarth's book sets. They're right here by my desk, so it's not going to be too much of a struggle to get it out. But The Killer Must Kill Again. That's what it is.
Okay, I haven't seen that one. That's why I had it.
Okay, yeah. We know who the killer is in that one. So, there's a few. There's probably like maybe one or two others, but those are like the ones that come to mind immediately. Hatchet for a Honeymoon is definitely one. Like I said, Killer Must Kill Again is another. But I love this movie. I'm a huge fan. And number 12 on my list didn't quite make top 10, but I am definitely glad you brought it up.
But darn close. So what do you got for number 8, Don?
Well, like I said, I figured it would be apropos to, keep it in the family. And I figured might as well keep it in the family. I absolutely hated to put, again, another Mario Bava one on here. But this movie is just so good.
I was going to say, is there another Bava brother? Did another one direct the film?
No, but Lamberto's son, Eduardo, he did do a couple of episodes of a TV series in, I think, early 2010s. It was a made for TV thing that didn't get an American distribution. There was a TV series that was made in the early 2010s, I think 2010 or 2011 or 2012, somewhere in there. And it was half an hour. It's right here. It's right in Troy's book. Let me see if I can, pull out some of the details for it.
I'm not meaning for you to do extra research, darling.
Oh, no, it's not necessarily extra research. It's right here. So it's called Six Passi Nel Giallo, which I don't know what that means, but it's looks like there's six episodes. Three of these are directed by Eduardo. One of these is directed by Antonio Margheriti's son, who's also coincidentally named Eduardo. And the other two are directed by Lamberto himself. So, it looks like there's a small little family connection there. All of these seem to be basically Giallo homages or, short form Giallo segments. Not really reading much else on it, but it looks like it's 2011, like I figured. And it doesn't really seem to have done much good because, never really got over to America. So most people don't know about it. But that's Lamberto's son. So we'll deal with that little deviance and come back to my number eight, which again is another one of Mario's all-time classics, Blood and Black Lace. The official start of the Giallo, I know a lot of people will say Girl Who Knew Too Much is the first true Giallo, but Blood and Black Lace is the one that everybody follows and homages. So to me, I consider that the first true Giallo. Basically, it's about a series of killings that strike the models at this boutique fashion house in the middle of Italy. And, basically the race to stop the killer and solve the identity of who's behind it. So, just an absolute blast. The imagery is just absolutely striking and beautiful. The locations are fantastic. The kills are fantastic. Lighting is just on point. Several sequences involve the killer manipulating the lighting around him to, hide in various locations or, get the drop on people when they least expect it. It's just fantastic. The identity of the killer may be kind of easy to guess, but it's still a surprise when it does appear. And to be the one that everybody copies, the formula here of not necessarily enhancing the murder mystery, but making the kills part and parcel to the film itself, and to have that be the big motivating factor overall is the factor that a lot of the later Giallos employed. And it's the one that this is the first one that started it. So, it's just an absolute blast. There's so much to like about this one. And I am a massive, massive Giallo fan. You will see a couple of others later on, just FYI. But it is just an absolute classic. And I mean, seek this out immediately. So, I guess number eight for me is Blood and Black Lace.
And what I like about Blood and Black Lace is, as you said, it's one of those two or three giallos that kind of sets the template. You've kind of got the investigative cop that isn't always the best, but, eventually...
He means well, but he's kind of ham-fisted and he doesn't do it as immediately as you want him to.
No, I mean, you've got beautiful women, you've got a mystery, you've got a kind of... a setting that, one thing about giallos is a lot of times the settings is not a place that your average person has an insight into. And this one, it's true to form. I mean, how many people here are involved with fashion houses, So it kind of takes you behind the veil of a place that you don't know about. It's got a mystery. It's got beautiful women. It's got an unknown killer. You've got your literally your black lace. Beautiful, beautiful film. Can't disagree with you. Now is my time at number 8 to throw out the big name. And there are certain names, as you know, you've probably gathered by this, that in this genre, in this area of the world, in this type of film, they come up a lot. It's my turn to jump into Lucio Fulci. And I'm going to go with Zombie, Zombie, Zombie. No, it's not the Cranberries. It's Zombie from 79. And it's just an iconic film. If you like zombie films, if you like gore, if you like exotic locations, if you like quality practical effects, if you like survival films, you're going to love Zombie. And Zombie has literally zombies coming up from under the earth, coming to attack someone on the beach. You've got them chasing people into, not chasing, but attacking people in remote huts in the middle of these islands. You've got, you know, are they going to survive? Who's going to survive? How spectacular will it be? Is it going to be over the top? I think this is a classic of the genre.
So regular listeners will know where I stand on the film, but for first-time listeners, I will just say we will talk about this at a later time.
Okie dokie. So, okay. Yeah. What do you got for number 7?
My number 7, I have, ironically, Fulci as well. Although I kind of went a slightly different direction than that.
Demonia.
Well, ironically, you're closer than you think. My number 7 is Don't Torture a Duckling. So you're close with the D.
The D. A little bit better quality of a film.
Just a smidge. Number 7 for me is Don't Torture a Duckling. One of my personal favorite giallos. Again, running theme there, but... it is just fantastic. One of my favorite mysteries. Basically, it's a series of child killings that are being committed in this remote town out in the middle of the countryside. A woman arrives in the area to take a break from her life in the city. She's, you know, done stuff. We'll, you know, leave the particulars as you know, for viewers to discover. And she basically gets wrapped up in it. And we'll, you know, like I said, just leave things as they stand for at that point. This is just a fantastic movie. I mean, there's just confrontational subject matter all over the place. Not least of which, one infamous sequence in particular involving the woman and a small child, which will be better left unsaid. But again, the subject matter involving a killer specifically targeting children, the revelations that come out of that, you know, again, very, very, very heavily involved in what goes on. I struggle with this one because a lot of it for what makes it work is kind of spoiler filled, just because you need to have, the context clues of what's going on to kind of fill in the gaps. But it is a fantastic film. I'm a huge, huge fan of this one. Just a ton of likable moments, great characters, a fantastic mystery, brutal set pieces, one in particular involving a person being whipped with a steel chain is one of the most hauntingly vicious and yet strikingly beautiful sequences I've ever seen. And it's just it's just fantastic. It is proof that Fulci was first and foremost a filmmaker that just happened to make horror films. And I am a huge, huge fan of Fulci. Like I said, he's probably my favorite filmmaker of all time. If he's not number one, I don't know who is, but the sheer volume of work he's done that I absolutely love is second to none. and this is probably the lowest of his masterpieces. It is just a fantastic movie, and I absolutely implore anyone that's said, you know, just known his 80s, you know, over the top gore fest to seek this one out and see just the versatility that he had and everything about it that makes this one work. So number seven for me, Fulci's Don't Torture a Duckling, 1972.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it, but from what I remember, dark, well shot, and it's got industry veteran Barbara Boucher. Mm-hmm. Does a pretty good little role in there. And I just looked her up. She is still in the business acting.
Yeah.
So
she's probably in her mid-70s by now.
Yeah. But again, this is her probably in her early 20s. This is a film that you do have to see. It might take you a couple viewings to appreciate, or it might not. Depends upon your sensitivity.
Just to get through it, because there is some sensitive content involved, but...
Yeah, it is. But again, as I like how you put it, he's a director that happens to do horror. Like, there's obviously stories, and it's written well, and it's plotted out, and it's one that, you know, almost he could do. He's known for doing multiple genres, and there's a reason why.
Exactly.
All righty. So I'm going to go with another Lucio Fulci. And this one is going to be one that I'm sure you'll talk about later. So this element will go quickly, but this is perhaps my favorite of his, The Beyond.
And you are correct.
which is one that I know will be higher on yours. And we have somewhat similar sensibilities, but then there's differences. And this is kind of where the difference is. I have no problem with The Beyond. I love The Beyond, also known as Seven Deaths of Death. Or whatever it is, wherever it was in Minneapolis versus Chicago versus Dallas. It kind of changed some names around, but it's set in New Orleans, down south. There's this hotel that's been around forever. Some evil things happen there. I'm keeping it vague on purpose. And you essentially have the door of hell down in the basement of this hotel. And all kinds of shenanigans. At a certain point, it's a zombie film. At a certain point, it's a supernatural film. At a certain point, it's a mystery film. There's one thing we haven't really talked about with Fulci, great practical effects. But the one part of this film that always makes me laugh is it falls into that cliche of the unending bullets to a gun. When they're upstairs and a particular character is
shooting. I'm very familiar with that. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, the never-ending bullets, they, you know, it's always a funny trope in, regardless of genre, happens in Westerns, happens in action. That's one of those things. But regardless of that, you know, minor little quirk of mine, I think it's a film that if you like practical effects, if you like survival films, if you like films where, you know, stuff's going to get crazy, but it's going to be a fun ride. It's got that historical nod at the beginning of the film. I like the setting of New Orleans and, you know, the mystery and the occultness of that area. This is a film you definitely have to see. And David Warbeck is fantastic in this film. This is one of those ones, if you're a fan of the genre, if you haven't seen it by now, please go see it.
For sure. Like I said earlier, I will talk about that in the later time.
I was going to say, this is flying by.
All right. So, we'll move on to number six. And I think it is time for me to return the favor. And I feel like this may be something that you will talk about at a later time. But I will, continue my giallo love affair one more time. And I will talk 1975's Deep Red. Profondo Rosso, Dario Argento. So, what
love the soundtrack. Love the score on Goblin is at their peak in this film.
I probably prefer Suspiria, ironically enough, but I will absolutely take up the challenge of listening to both to see which one's better any day of the week. That is a very fun time that I'm always down to do.
That sounds like a good night. Have yourself a good libation and put in your room and just play it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that is a challenge that I will absolutely never be one to turn down. But yeah, I mean, the Giallo at its peak, probably number one or number two on anybody's list in the genre. Just an amazing story, fantastic mystery, brutal deaths, tons of great characters, odd touches of humor that actually work, and just a fantastic finale. I can go on and on about this, probably as long as the director's version of the film itself, but...
How much longer is the director's version?
The director's version is 205. The public, let's see, there's three different cuts of the film. So there's the public domain version known as the Hatchet Murders, which is 139. There's the international export version, which is 150. That has all of the dialogue in it, and it's not, you know, it's like that's got the complete dub to it. And then there's the director's cut, which is I think 205, and that's got the dubbed scenes with the additional 15 minutes that they play in Italian with English subtitles, because that part was cut out before it was dubbed.
Okay, because so, I have seen the second one you mentioned.
Yeah.
And I've seen that multiple times.
Yeah, a lot of people will probably have seen the international export version. That's what they call it. That is 150, and that is completely dubbed. There's, you know, no Italian in it. There's a few releases that have it. I think Arrow has it on both of their versions. The regular standalone version that they released a few years ago, and then I think they released a 4K of it either last year or maybe the year before. But that has both versions as well, where it has the full international export version and the full director's cut with the ability to see the dubbed scenes with the Italian language, or to see the full Italian version with the subtitles in its complete form. So they do offer both versions. I think it's on the two Arrow releases.
All I'll say about this one is it's the original Jigsaw.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good one. I'll just say that. My number six is one that I'm surprised you haven't mentioned yet, but it might be higher on your list. And that is, I'm going to go to the Mario Bava well, and I'm going to go with what I consider the first slasher, and that's Bay of Blood. I think it's a film that kind of sets up the genre. I mean, you could argue Psycho, you could argue Black Christmas, you could, you know, some people may make an argument to something like Texas Chainsaw. I think Bay of Blood kind of sets up the slasher genre, because you've got cool people going out in the woods, partying, drinking, playing music, good-looking women there to do whatever they feel like doing, and then all heck breaks loose. And the people start getting picked off. And you've got one of the coolest hook knives you're ever going to see. You get lots of throat slashes and people eliminated one after one after one. And you can only imagine people watching this back in 1971, what is going on? Because people up until that point, you know, you had your horror that was, you know, your universal horror. You had your Hammer horror. You know, you had a little bit of Gordon Lewis, but Bay of Blood, I think, kind of took it to the next level. And so that's why I put it at number six.
Nice, yeah. On my honorable mentions, not in my main list, but honorable mention for sure. I'm a huge fan. I actually do agree with you on one thing, that it is, for me, it is the de facto dividing line between slashers and giallo. This is, when it comes to slashers, I think this is number one. This is the first one. So,
like where would you put this relative to Halloween or Friday the 13th?
I think, like I said, this is the first one. This is slasher film number one. So yeah. I think this is, I've always said you need a intermediate between giallo and slasher to finalize the, you know, finalize everything to get both, you know, have its feet in both, you know, waters to be the one that, you know, finally crosses the boundary. I would probably want to discuss that more in depth. It'd probably not be something that, you know, is, you know, it, time frames would be, you know, appropriate for this kind of a conversation. But it, that, like I said, for my personal view, I prefer the first slasher to be a combination of slasher and giallo, and this is the one that fits the bill.
Yeah, this is similar to that conversation with stage fright.
Right. Yeah. I think just because I think this one comes first, you know, it's released earliest. I would give it the nod, but like I said, to fully dive into that would be a conversation best given for, you know, a more elaborate and, you know, unrestricted time frame.
Absolutely.
Rather than.
I was gonna say let's pick a list next time I'm on of 10 divisive horror films.
Yeah, the time constraints for me to extrapolate on that would probably not be worthwhile for this, but I'm definitely open to explaining why at the very least, if given the right circumstances. So I cannot disagree. Fantastic effort. Love that movie. Huge fan. So
all right, what you got for number 5, Mr. Rinelli?
Number 5, we're somewhat done with the giallos for now, but we're not done with Bava. We have one more trip to the patriarch. And this is probably going to be the shock that I think this is my favorite of all of his work, but I absolutely adore this movie. It is a sentimental choice, the very first Italian horror film I ever watched. It is the one that hooked me at a time when I had not seen anything like this at all. When I first originally watched this movie, my knowledge of horror was the big four American slashers, Freddy, Michael, Jason, and Leatherface, Stephen King, Chucky, and maybe The Omen. And that was probably, and I mean, maybe, you know, Jaws and, you know, Scream and, you know, maybe just like a few small bits and pieces here and there. But this was the first time that I had seen something completely different, and it just absolutely floored me. I cannot overstate how much of an impression this movie made on me the first time I saw it, and that would be 1960s Black Sunday.
Oh, Black Sunday. Barbara Steele. Oh.
Barbara Steele in a dual role, please. I can only get so hard. to, you know, be a little vulgar on the fact, but I mean, it is completely appropriate given the circumstances involved.
That first kill.
I mean, you talk about grabbing a viewer by the balls and saying, you're gonna stay here, you're gonna enjoy something, and you're gonna like what we give you or else. And I mean, the opening to this is just, I mean, it goes down to me as maybe a top 5 opening of all time. And like I said, I cannot overstate enough how much of an impression this made on somebody that didn't know European horror, that didn't know horror beyond 1975. Like, Jaws would have maybe have been the oldest film I had seen at, you know, horror film, at the very least. I'd seen, you know, stuff that even predates this one, but you know, in terms of horror, this was the oldest film I'd ever seen, the first black and white film I'd ever seen, and the very first, not just European, but Italian horror film I'd ever seen. And that opening got me involved, hooked me, and I've never let go of it. And I cannot overstate how much I've enjoyed being embraced in that grip the entire time. It's been since I've seen this. I mean, I can go on all day just listing all of the various beautiful landscape, fantastic visuals. I mean, the scene of the resurrection when the henchman crawls out of the dirt and you see that gnarled hand come out of the ground and you see the figure rising up behind it. Just, it is just absolutely perfect. The visuals of the witch, you know, when we finally get to see her in her final form, just I mean, it's haunting visuals, and it's just amazing. Like I said, can go on and on all day about this movie. It is, again, just a sentimental choice, but to absolutely honor such an all-time classic, I have to include it, number five, Black Sunday.
Yeah, it's one that I saw not that long ago for the first time in a few years. And it's amazing that a film that's 65 years old almost holds up that well. And I think a lot of it is added by the black and white production.
Totally, yeah.
I think, you know, the shadows, the cobwebs, the kills that happen, you can see, but you can't see. Let's just say there's something that involves an Iron Maiden that doesn't include Bruce Dickinson. This is a film that, yeah, if you're somebody here who's listening because you're interested by the topic, but you haven't really jumped into the deep end yet, start with this one and then go to Blood and Black Lace and make your way from there. I am not a gatekeeper. Do whatever the heck you want. I'm just advising you to do so.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. I would probably say, even though there are films I have higher on this list, if you need an introduction of any sort to the genre, whether, you know, you've never seen Italian horror or you haven't gone into this particular part of the genre, you know, like I said, if, you know, if you're not familiar with, you know, pre-60s or pre-70s genre fare, this is absolutely one of the first films I would recommend people to check out to get a handle on whether or not you enjoy this particular type of genre film.
And if you like Barbara Steele, fast forward about 12, 14 years and then go watch her in Shivers. Fantastic. Anyway, so I'll go for my number five. And when you think of Italian horror, there is one particular genre that we haven't really touched. And I think it needs to be. And I'm going to go to the granddaddy of them all. I'm going to go with Cannibal Holocaust. Ruggero Deodato, infamous, banned in God knows how many countries. They were actually charged with attempted murder, or actually might have been murder until it was sorted out. I'll just read you the IMDb description. During a rescue mission into the Amazon rainforest, a professor stumbles across lost films shot by a missing documentary crew. Sure, that's your rudimentary overarching description, but it's so much more than that. I'm not going to get into all of the aspects of it. There are some things involving animals that might make some people queasy, and for good reason. But the depth of story here, that ending is absolutely terrifying. It is one of the first films that used elements of found footage. There are reprehensible characters. The score is absolutely beautiful in this. Like, when people ask me what my favorite scores are, I generally say Deep Red. And then I go to Maximum Overdrive, that personal thing for me there. But this one is beautiful. Robert Kerman, I think, is really strong in this film. It's not going to be for everybody. But if you like one that will make you think, one you won't forget about, watch this at 11 o'clock at night with the lights out, your wife or girlfriend's in bed, throw on Cannibal Holocaust. You won't regret it.
Nice. Contrary to popular belief, if there is one film that I do not recommend anyone to watch, it is Cannibal Holocaust. I will not go into the details. Not on my list. I have a very, very, very complicated relationship with that movie. I completely agree with everything you said. It is haunting. It is fantastic. It is well made. The story is just engrossing. The performances are just amazing. And I mean, the special effects in that movie speak for themselves. I mean, they fooled the censorship board to the point that the filmmakers had to produce the actors and show to the world that they had not killed them. I mean, I cannot think of a better time to, you know, a better example of just how good the effects in, are at that point.
But this is another one. This is another one of those on the list of divisive films.
Yeah. I was just about to get to that. that is all well and good. The treatment of animals in this film is a different story. And that is the complete and absolute reason why I say this is not a film that you should watch. If you are willing to put aside what happens in the film and go forward in the knowledge that it genuinely does happen, that is real, it is not being faked, and that really did happen, by all means, enjoy the film on its own merits. But don't say I didn't warn you, and don't come crying to me because of it. So I say it is a film that you do not need to watch. I am completely sympathetic. I do not support it. I do not appreciate it or condone it. It is something that I have made peace with. I have seen the film once to see for myself. I do not watch the film since. I have not watched the film since, and it is not in my collection as a result. So that is the stance that I have personally taken on it, and that is the stance that I have on it going forward. So
this is one of those ones where in the community, you got your left and your right, and there's exactly. There's no middle ground.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I have seen it to form my thoughts on it, and I did that of my own volition, and I have made my peace with it. I know where I stand on it, and I do not need to see it again to change or alter my viewpoints. I appreciate it as a fantastic movie. It is genuinely thought-provoking, and that's the part that gets me, is that you can actually have a genuine and honest conversation about it, and you don't even need to touch up what happens to the, you know, animals involved. There is a genuine conversation to be had with the film, but because of what happens, I personally, and I know that this is a topic that everybody can agree or disagree with, I see why nobody has to see this movie. And even though there is a cruelty-free version, the fact that that has to exist is, you know, probably, you know, going to throw up enough alarm bells for a reason. So, yeah.
And I'll keep it vague to let people, other than to know that there is a trigger warning.
Well, I mean, there's a trigger warning. We've been talking about it for a few minutes. But... yeah, go ahead.
No, nothing at all. I was just going to say, what do you have for number four?
Okay, well, my number four, we are returning to Argento. And we discussed this briefly in joking and in jest. And I know that I kind of made a joke about which one score do I prefer, Suspiria or Deep Red or this one. Ever so slightly favor this one. My number four is Suspiria. It is very, very, very hard for me to separate the two. I prefer my films under 2 hours, which is the main difference. And that is probably the only separation that I have between the two. I cannot overstate how much this movie, again, just like Black Sunday, this one absolutely just floored me at a time when I did not know what I was watching. I did not know what type of film I was getting into. But man, did I just absolutely get blown away by it when I first saw it. The atmosphere in this thing is just otherworldly. Like it literally feels like a waking nightmare. Logic necessarily may not be the film's strongest point, but if you just say to hell with it and go with the flow, man, are you rewarded. I cannot, again, another factor with this one here, cannot overstate just how absolutely gorgeous this looks. Set design, colors, the lighting in this is just, it is just immaculate. The story is just creepy and involved, and it just builds and builds and builds. The gore is fantastic. The characters are not the best, but they serve for what goes on here. And it is just, it for me, it is imminently rewatchable. I think this is probably maybe after one or film higher on this one. This is probably the film I've seen the most, and it's the one that I continue to enjoy. My first Argento, my most beloved. You know, again, another director that is very high on the list, but number four for me is Suspiria.
I love that we just had the debate over Cannibal Holocaust because I can't stand Suspiria. I think it's one of the most overrated horror films to be out there. And I don't do that to be confrontational. I've said it many, many times on Land of the Creeps.
And that's why I never introduced it by saying one that I think will probably appear earlier. I have heard about your feelings on this, and I never said that for a specific reason. So I do know, I do my research and I do my homework.
Yes. And I will say it is beautifully shot. Right. The colors, the landscape, the place that it occurs, the location is beautiful. Goblin has an incredible score to this. It has some really cool kills. The opening kill with somebody dangling, it's great. But it's way too out there for me. I don't mind an out there film. I love a trippy film. You give me Lovecraftian, that's fine by me. This is way too disjointed for me.
Understandable, yeah.
I mean, walking down a corridor and finding witches behind closets and falling into a vat of needles, what the hell is that? The story at a certain point, I'm like, I'm not even going to bother trying to take notes. Let me just, you know, get through. I've seen it 3 times in my life. I'm not making it a fourth. Now, that's not, well, I say that in jest. I might. Like, it's a well done from a master of his craft. It's just not to my taste.
No worries. I'm completely fine with that. Like I said, it's not one that I do try to advocate it. But, you know, if for somebody that has a valid reason, like I've heard you mention numerous times over, I am not going to try to defend it or push it upon you. I knew where you're coming from. And I never said we may be talking about this one later for a reason, because I do know your history. So
it's one of those, you know, it's not that it triggers me or anything. I just.
Yeah.
it's same thing. All right, so my number four is going back to Argento, an absolute master, one that's been brought up already, and that's Deep Red. And I'm not going to rehash what you have said before, other than to say I love the mishmash of elements. There is a supernatural element to this. There's a giallo-esque element to this. There is a mystery as to who is perpetrating the crimes. I do think it's really well written. And the one thing I like about this with Argento is he's a very forward-thinking man. He doesn't really give a two hoots what people think about what he writes, in the sense of this is 1975. He has a very prominent homosexual character. Didn't think twice about having it. There's the situation of we're in the middle of women's liberation, and that is fully engrossed into this. But at the end of the day, it's a horror film. You've got your red herrings. You've got your twists and your turns. You've got a bit of gore involved there, creepiness. There's a certain scene involving a shower and the steam. You've got your police officer looking for the killer. This is, the score is brilliant in this film. You really, really have to see Deep Red.
Yeah, I can't disagree any further.
Nope.
Yeah. So
I was gonna say, and David Hemmings is great in this.
Yeah, fantastic. I love him.
The interplay with him and Nicolidi, you know, the sexual tension, the tit for tat. It's great.
Yeah, fantastic. And I will say this because based on early experience, there is more of that in the director's cut that they cut out.
Oh, so, there is. Okay. Yeah, maybe I'll look out for it.
Yeah, there's a few scenes there. There's a fantastic running gag with the car door. I will save that. But yeah, if you're into that because of them, the director's cut will have a little bit more for you to enjoy.
All right. So what's make marks your top three?
All right. So number three, we're staying with Argento. And this is my other all-time favorite masterpiece of his. And absolutely just adore this movie. Again, it's another first, you know, one of the earlier films of his I watched. And I absolutely just adore this movie. 1982's Tenebrae.
Oh, John Saxon.
John Saxon, absolutely. Ugh. John Saxon, Anthony Franciosa, and Juliana Gemma. I don't know if anybody would be familiar with those last two names, but anybody that knows spaghetti westerns will absolutely know who those two names are. So, again, another fantastic Daria performance, just speaking of her. But yeah, absolutely. I think I saw Tenebrae actually before. I know Deep Red was the first one, but I don't remember if I saw Tenebrae first or if I saw Suspiria first. But just a fantastic movie.
And another film with another one with Daria Nicolodi.
Yeah, absolutely. just absolutely amazing. Probably one of Argento's most coherent storylines. I don't think it's his personal favorite. My personal favorite, at least, is Bird with a Crystal Plumage, but it's not on the list. But still, you get a fantastic mystery here. You get a great whodunit. And you even get a fantastic reveal that kind of twists everything on its head at the very last minute that is actually played out really well. And I do like the way that it comes off. Brutal kills, just tons of fantastic gore all over the place, fun stalking scenes, and you know, one in particular where you see the camera back out of the house, run along the sidings, and then run up the stairs on the outside of the house, mind you, and run around to the second floor of the house, and you see the character walk into the room the second you walk into the camera enters the window in one continuous shot. Just absolutely mind-blowing way to do a scene transition. But yeah, it's just a fantastic movie. Probably I would say his most I struggle to use the term, but I would probably say, you know, the most approachable. You know, it's not, you know, as wild and wacky as Suspiria, and it's not
it's the most coherent, I think.
Yeah, like I said, I think Burb may probably edge it out, but I think it's probably the most commercial and the most easily accessible. Yeah. I think that's probably where I'm going with it. You know, Suspiria is, you know, artistic and out there, and it's kind of, you know, wacky and wild and does its own thing. You know, Deep Red may kind of, you know, plod along a little too long. You know, 2 hours may seem like a big task for somebody just trying to get into Argento. This is a nice, crisp, clean 91 minutes, you know. Coherent story, again, one of Argento's best. You know, it hits all the hallmarks, and it, you know, it would probably be, you know, his most accessible, if not his most successful. I think that's what I'm trying to say here. But yeah, overall, just an absolutely fantastic movie. And yeah, Argento at its prime, you know, slasher, giallo, hybrid at its best. So number three for me is...
I was going to say, I always sort of struggle... It is a giallo, but it's not kind of in the mid-70s form of giallo.
Right, yeah. There's definitely a lot of slasher elements to it.
Yeah, but there's some cool... That final 10-minute scene, wow. It's great, you know, scenes involving glass. I'll just leave it at that.
Right.
Yeah, you got it. And John Saxon has a great scene sitting on a city bench.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. One of my favorites.
I'll leave it right there. Right. My number three, you had mentioned down below a little bit, but I really love the film. I love the setting, and that's Demons. Demons to me is, it's of all the films on this, it's probably the most fun. This is really ensconced itself in 80s horror lore. And it really fits in really well. As you said, you got the heavy metal music, you got the girls in the tight short skirts, you got the macho guys, you got the pimp. To me, the pimp kind of looks like Rick James. That's what he kind of looks like to me. You've got a setting. You've got, are they going to escape? You've kind of got cocaine off female body parts. You've got Michael Suave as the person at the end. It's one, it's got some practical gore. It's got like things pussing out and pimply, and it's got some chase scenes. It's small space location. Yeah. Check out Demons if you haven't seen it.
Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, you know where I stand on it. So.
Yep, exactly. That's why I didn't over belabor it, because you pretty much said your piece.
Yeah. And I guess that's me kind of leave my choices a little obvious, but maybe not necessarily the order. But I guess that will be undone for now. My number two is The Beyond. Actually, my second favorite movie of all time. I absolutely adore this movie. The atmosphere, the imagery, the gore, the zombies, the setting, the setup, just pitch perfect. I absolutely love this. Yeah, you said a lot of it already. So again, I will be brief. Yeah, number two for me is The Beyond.
Yeah, The Beyond of all the films on this list, it might have the best atmosphere.
It literally drips off the film.
Just, I mean, yeah. There's the story that Dave Becker tells us of when there's the people in the basement at the end of this, at the end of the movie. They were people that were unemployed. They were street people, and they were paid in alcohol. You couldn't get away with that these days.
Right.
Yeah. Some homeless man here's a fifth of whiskey. Here, go. Can you be in my movie? I don't think you could. But yeah, I love the movie. Anybody that, again, it's another one of those ones. If you're kind of new to the genre, this is one you throw in. My number two, I know, isn't on your list. This is one that has an actor in it that might be in three roles that you're not gonna forget. He's a icon in a particular genre within Italian cinema and North American cinema. We're talking about grindhouse to the most grindhousey. We're talking about a mean-spirited film. We're talking about, to me, and I'm saying this on the record, is the best revenge film I know of. And that's The House on the Edge of the Park. I love this film. It's creepy, yes. Mean-spirited, absolutely. Starring David Hess, who has been in so many films. You're going to remember him in particular, Last House on the Left. But in this film, him and his buddy, another genre staple, Giovanni Lombardi Radice, they are mechanics. They get taken down to a party by the rich people that come in for help. They get there. There's a society, you know, it's the haves and the have-nots. And I don't want to give it all away, but they kind of decide to take over the house. They're going to have their way with the women. The movie opens with a rape. It is not pretty stuff. But when you get to that end, holy shamoly. I love that ending. I absolutely adore that ending. David Hess is the biggest dick, but you're cheering for him and against him at the same time. I don't know what your thoughts are on this film, Don.
I've seen it once over a decade ago and don't remember much about it. I know I've seen it. I know what you're talking about, but yeah, it's one of those where it's a little fuzzy in my memory because I've seen it once and it was a good decade ago.
Gotcha. Been there. Now this is your homework. You listen to the two soundtracks while having on House on the Edge of the Park.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So.
All right. What is your number one? What is your John Bonham number one?
Again, number one will be no stranger or surprise to anyone. I've mentioned this numerous times. It is my favorite horror film of all time. It is probably number two or three on my general movie list all time. And one that you mentioned earlier tonight as well, Lucio Fulci's Zombie.
Oh, there you go. Oh, you didn't sing the Cranberries song.
Because I've never heard the zombie version.
Okay.
I actually only know it because it was sampled in a song by, what's their name? Nanowar of Steel. They covered it in one of their, they covered their, you know, parodied it in one of their songs, and that's the only reason I know of it.
Okay. I'm just showing my age. That's all I'm doing.
I know that much about it. I probably heard snippets of it, but I don't know the song in full.
Anyways, it really has nothing to do with zombies. So what is it you love? What is it that gravitates to you towards this film?
One, I am a massive zombie fan. Zombies are one of my favorite genres, and I love the way that this approaches them. That it's, to me, the literal personification of Walking Dead thing, where I, as much as I appreciate the Romero version of things where it's your next door neighbor or, you know, the person that you see on the street every day for the like last 10 years that's suddenly coming to kill you, that doesn't frighten me as much as it does when I look out and I see somebody that died centuries ago and is coming to kill me. That part of it freaks me out more than it does, you know, the Romero side of things. Do you add in my all-time favorite zombie makeup? I don't know if I've ever seen zombies look better. The gore in this is just an absolute delight. I, for those that are uninitiated, I am a massive gore hound. You cannot make it bloody enough for me. I do not care. Put more in and then double it, and you probably got something where I'll say, yeah, maybe you're probably going to need a little bit more. You cannot make a movie bloody enough for me. You have a just absolutely fantastic story. I love the setup to this. It makes it feel like it's not actually a zombie movie, but it just it goes off in a different direction, and then it just makes zombies feel like it's a punchline where you're not expecting it to be about zombies. You're expecting it to be this mad doctor movie, and all of a sudden then you turn around and then the culprit of the, you know, the doctor's work is something to do with the zombies. And then it just goes off from there. You have just an atmosphere and just this a sense of dread that just encapsulates everything. And I am a firm believer of the phrase creepy things happening in creepy locations. That is one of my favorite things in the genre. And this has it in spades. The atmosphere on the island, you know, there's that lingering dread that something is going to happen. You just don't know what, and it's you don't know when. And I love that. The action scenes are great. I love the encounters. It's never boring. And for those who don't know me, you know that I love me some sharks. And I just have three words to finalize everything: zombie versus shark.
What a scene. What a scene.
I think that is enough for me to finalize everything. If you know me and you know my love of sharks and you know my love of zombies, then I just need to say those three magic words. Mic drop. End of conversation.
I think I saw somebody had a t-shirt that had them struggling underwater. I was like, that is friggin' awesome. I love that. Realistic looking? No. Fun? Oh, heck yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, it's my number one movie of all time, or number one horror movie of all time, probably number two or three all time.
Just regardless curious, of Don, genre. What movie overall might you have ahead
Gojira.
Of
Gojira. Oh. The original Godzilla.
Gojira.
I haven't figured out which version I like more. I think the Japanese version is the better made movie, but I think the American version is more entertaining. So I can't make the distinction.
Is that the one where they kind of chop it together around spliced acting scenes? Yeah.
Yeah. The American version has an actor named Raymond Burr in it.
Yeah, it's a little known guy, you know, small guy.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, that to me, that's my favorite film of all time. So
okay, then, now to get aside, what is your favorite non-genre film?
Godzilla. I don't consider it a horror movie.
Well, no, but it's still kind of within the... What would be your favorite straight drama?
I don't know if I even watch any.
Like The Godfather, Story? You know, that kind of, you know.
I mean, if it's something that's not tangentially related to the genre, I'd probably say Police Story. Okay. Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan. I thought you were going to say Smokey and the Bandit. Anyway.
Top five. I have a lot of fun with that one. I haven't seen it in years, but I have a lot of fun with that one. That was a good time.
Anyways, I've taken you down some rabbit holes. You know what? Because I am an absolute gore hound. I'm one of those guys that, like, in the Beyond, I want to see the spike go through the eye. I want to see how much cartilage comes off on that piece of wood. Like, that's
exactly.
So, you know, I think our next one, we've gone to Japan. Or sorry, Italy. This one, our next one may take us to Japan.
Nice.
There's a lot of fun that can happen with that one too. Now, especially with your love of Asian cinema.
Yep.
Now, my number one is one you have mentioned, and it is not on your list. I think it is the poster child of the giallo genre. I think it is the most incredible debut within the genre. And I will argue, I said this the other day on Land of the Creeps, I will argue, regardless of genre, arguably the best debut of all time, and that's The Bird with the Crystal Plumage.
Mm-hmm.
I love this film. And it's partly because it does set up the genre. Now, we've mentioned Blood and Black Lace kind of set the template, but this is the one that when it was really in its peak from 70 to 82, this is the one that I think set the standard. And it's got, you know, it's got the police chase and the police serial, and also the introduction of the inept police, the bumbling police, but they're there enough. I think Enrico Salerno is great as almost a pre-Columbo type character. I think Tony Musante and the voyeuristic approach that you take in this film, I think Susie Kendall does a great job with it. The IMDb description is, an American expatriate in Rome attempts to unmask a serial killer he witnessed in the act of an attempted murder and is now haunting him and his girlfriend. What happens is that Musante is walking down the street, and across the street, there's a murder that goes on in an art gallery behind a double-paned door/window, and he can't get in, and he witnesses a murder. And how the elements unfold in front of him with the police and his own intuition and the fact he can't leave the country. So he's kind of decided that I'm going to become my own Tom Selleck, Magnum PI, and try to work with the police and figure this out. And the ending and how the name of the movie connects to it and the multiple twists and the different personalities that are involved. I don't think it gets any better in the genre of giallo and Italian cinema than Crystal Plumage.
I love this movie. Another honorable mention for me. You said it great. I think this is easily Argento's best mystery. I love the setup. I think it's fantastic. The twists are logical, and the stalking scenes are amazing. The kills are fantastic. You know, the killer is logical when you think back on everything and how it all plays out. Yeah, it's a fantastic film.
There's a really good fall.
Right. Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Don, I think we did Italian horror pretty good justice here.
Absolutely. If we have any more time to do justice, let's let us off a couple honorable mentions if we have any.
Sure. I have a list. I think I didn't count them any. Probably about 20, and then I chopped off 10. If you want me just to go over briefly.
Yeah, just you know, rattle off a few names. You know, no need for a description, but you know, worthwhile enough to check out.
All I'm gonna say is George Eastman, Anthropophagus. You'll never think of sausage the same way.
Nope.
Black Belly of the Tarantula. Love that film. I also had Black Sabbath down. Cat O' Nine Tails. I quite enjoy that film. The one that I thought you were going with when you talked about the theater was The Killer Reserved 9 Seats.
Ah, I haven't seen that one yet. I actually only picked up the Arrow set for that. I think it's in the black one, right?
I don't have it. I've seen it online. Now the problem.
Okay, yeah, I know it's in one of the Arrow sets because they've done like a 4 or 5, and I picked up 2 of them for Christmas, and I know it's in one of them. I haven't seen it yet though.
I think you're gonna like it because it's a little bit sexy. It's a little bit out there. You got some oddball characters. It's all set within a theater, and it is literally 10 Little Indians. kind of a better version of with the $8 of the August Moon. I like it better than that one. Or $5. Mm. $5 for an August
Moon. Yeah.
Yeah. I also had Tenebrae. Cannibal Ferox. Fun film. I enjoy that. Our friend Giovanni Ribisi. I had Cemetery Man, which I don't mind nearly. Torso. I think Torso is a pretty good little film. And then Quack Quack, New York Ripper.
Nice.
That one is dirty in terms of like lots of brutal kills, heavy use of sexuality, police, serial, but a lot of fun, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
I had a couple more that are in the vein of Wild Beasts that I thought were not nearly at that level, but I enjoy. The one I mentioned about Mate, I'm pretty sure it's Mate. He did Great White, a.k.a. The Last Shark.
That's Enzo Castellari.
Oh, is that Castellari? Okay. Yeah, I enjoy that film. I've seen it multiple times. And it's almost parallel to Jaws. Not exactly, but they put their own spin on it.
Right.
And then the last one was Dr. Butcher, M.D.
which
I find, again, just a fun... Put your brain at the door zombie film.
Nice, yeah. Well,
and a great poster. Fantastic poster.
Yeah. I mean, I have it as Zombie Holocaust, but that one was also an honorable mention for me. Alternate name, but same movie.
Same movie, yeah.
Yeah. Another one for me was Burial Grounds. Dirty, sleazy, grimy zombie movie. Love that movie.
Yep.
A couple of other Sergio Martino ones. I had The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward.
Oh, good film.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. My personal favorite, All the Colors of the Dark. Just amazing movie. I love that one. I too had Black Belly of the Tarantula. Great giallo. Another one would be The Fifth Chord. Underrated. Very few people mention it, but I'm a massive fan. I love that movie.
I haven't seen that one in a long time.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Like I said, one of my favorite giallos. Definitely worthwhile. And the one that I absolutely adore, I wanted this one on the list. I couldn't make it. There's just too many good movies. One of my all-time favorite gothic horror movies, The Long Hair of Death. Another Barbara Steele black and white gothic horror masterpiece. Just an amazing, amazing movie. I couldn't get it on the list, but yeah. And finally, just for shits and giggles, my number 11 was also Torso.
Oh, really?
Yeah, number 11 was Torso. So yeah, Torso, Long Hair of Death, the last ones were there. Like I said, I could probably go on listing more, but... I think we've provided enough of a starter pack for people to get interested that I think we've done our due diligence and have given them enough for one night.
Yeah, I'm curious. I thought you were going to get up there, City of the Living Dead.
It's great. Don't get me wrong. It's a fantastic movie. I've just come to find a few more flaws with it the more I rewatch it. It's just one of those where as much as I love the imagery, as much as I love the atmosphere, as much as I love the gore, the wackiness, there's just a few too many issues that have been pointed out to me recently. The more I've heard other shows talk about it, the more I've rewatched it, that it's kind of slipped a little bit down in my rankings, and, you know, discovered more films. Personally, I've, for the last several years, conducted Italian Horror Month in the month of November, where I watch, or at least I try to as often as I can, Italian horror movies specifically. So it's kind of exposed me to a few more that I enjoy more than City of the Living Dead. Like I said, don't get me wrong, still love it, still have a great time with it, but just the combination of a few too many flaws that have been pointed out either in other shows or in rewatches, as well as being exposed to others that I enjoy just as much, have kind of pushed that one just ever so slightly down the list. So
okay. I was going to say, I have three other quick giallos and we'll get out of here. Sure. One I really enjoyed was, and it's pervy, and so you're like, but I really enjoy Strip Nude for Your Killer.
Yeah, fun.
It's a fun film. Like, really, it's just a fun film. Don't go in and watch it if you're a feminist. Just don't. What have you done to Solange?
One of those I haven't seen in long enough to have an opinion on it, but I do remember enjoying it.
And
my recollections are enjoyable, but I haven't seen it enough to comment more.
And the last one is, Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key.
Nice.
I thought that was a fun one. But anyways, again, as you said, this is kind of the 30 CD or DVD starter pack.
Right, yeah.
Take it from there.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think that we'll call it a show. So, yeah, this was as much fun as I imagined it would be. And like I said, I've always got a special spot for you on the show. You christened it, and we're guest number one, so I'm always happy to have you on. And, thank you again for doing this. This was a blast.
Thank you very much for having me on. Anybody wants to listen to me, check out Land of the Creeps with Greg, Dave, Pearl, and myself. We're a lot of fun. But you're here for Dawn. Dawn deserves all the special shine and light on this. And I'm hoping that this one gets higher ratings than the first one.
I have to check. I think you were third or fourth on the episode list. I don't remember, but I think you were third or fourth most downloaded, either because of your fantastic knowledge, or it was the first one. But
it's
probably a combination of the two, but I'm willing to lean more towards the first explanation.
I was going to say, my explanation is I have a face for radio.
Same here. That's why I got into podcasting.
Well, everybody, thanks for this. This was a lot of fun, and always listen to Dawn.
Yeah, and like I said, listen to Bill as well, because I have him on for a reason. So check out all of the links down below for you to check out and follow his work. Thank you all again for listening. Thank you for joining me, and we will see you next time with a new episode. So until then, take care.